If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 442 of the Colombia Calling podcast. This week's guest is coming on the show for the third time, and it's also his third time lucky. He made it across the Darien jungle. So we are going to transport you from wherever you are today to these impenetrable, well, not so much anymore, these impenetrable jungles that connect South America with Central America. And we'll be talking to Daniel Eggington from Birmingham in the UK and how he crossed the Pacific side of the Darien Gap. So very different to the Caribbean side, where the long-suffering migrants from all over the world are making it to Colombia and then doing this arduous and very, very difficult and often deathly trek up to Panama, and then hoping to go from there up to the United States. So Daniel explains to us how he did it, and I urge you all not to do this. And of course, he shares the challenges which he faced on the way, and these are by no small means light. Please, 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 please support our sponsors as they support us. So the Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. And this episode is also brought to you by BNB Colombia Tours, experts in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Colombia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. So check out their website at bnbcolombia.com. Complete the free itinerary form and tell them that Colombia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. If you can't find that website, just do colombiacalling.co, and there is one of their website forms, and you can just fill it out there on our website, colombiacalling.co. That's .co. So please, and also, think about supporting us on patreon.com. Make myself and Emily Hart with the news brief very happy indeed. It would be great to make this more sustainable as a podcast, 442 episodes in. So now over to Emily with the news, and then we'll be back with Daniel Eggington telling us the warts and all of his trek up the Pacific side of the Darien Gap through the jungles to Panama. So don't go away. Great episode in the pipeline.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your top stories for the week of Monday, 26th of September, 2022. President Gustavo Petro has taken another step towards his policy aim of total peace, announcing that a multilateral ceasefire will soon be initiated between the state and all groups willing to negotiate agreements, of which there are reportedly at least 22, including guerrilla, dissident FARC, groups of paramilitary origin, and drug trafficking gangs. The ceasefire will be complicated by the need for verification mechanisms to track compliance and violence, as well as the ongoing debate around the form in which armed groups will submit to Colombian justice. In the midst of this, the leader of a FARC dissident group who had been declared dead earlier this year by former President Iván Duque has reappeared. Néstor Gregorio Vera, also known as Iván Mordisco, appeared in a video declaring his willingness to participate in peace talks. Meanwhile, Colombia has now seen 80 massacres this year. The latest was in Puerto Lleras in the department of Meta, with four men between the ages of 25 and 30 murdered in a remote rural area. Petro's former rival for the presidency, Rodolfo Hernández, resigned from the Senate this week, supposedly planning to seek governorship of his native Santander department or a second mayorship of its capital, Bucaramanga. Hernández said that his presence in the Senate is like having Lionel Messi as goalkeeper, considering himself a man of executive action rather than debate. He spent 2 months as senator and his seat will not be filled in his absence. Hernández was one of the most voted candidates in the history of Colombia, with 10 million votes in June's presidential runoff. The new government's agrarian reform has kicked off with a huge titling of land. Around 700,000 hectares have been titled to campesinos, indigenous people, and Afro-Colombians across 19 departments. Through formalization of legal ownership, farmers and landowners will have access to state benefits, for example, income generation projects and support to make lands more productive. Formalization of ownership was also a goal set in the 2016 peace agreement with the FARC. Around 2 million hectares have been titled since the signing of that agreement, but the goal is 10 million. 7 million to be formalized and 3 million new hectares to be handed over. The latter 3 million will require the state to buy and deliver them. Formalization of land titles is also aimed at avoiding land invasions, though this month's wave of invasions continues. There have now been 108 occupations of land, according to Ombudsman Carlos Camargo. More than a third of those are in Cauca. Camargo says there are two main causes for these invasions: campesino farmers who do not have access to land and ethnic communities claiming their ancestral territory. However, he also cited cases which have links to criminal groups, saying that at least 13 are linked with illegal armed structures. In Colombia, just 0.4% of the population owns 46% of rural land. Meanwhile, Petro gave his first speech at the United Nations General Assembly. He focused on deforestation, unrestrained capitalism and fossil fuel extraction, and the wars in their name, reiterating the failure of the war on drugs, which in the 40 years since its inception under US President Richard Nixon has left millions of people dead across Latin America with no major successes. The president then travelled to the border city of Cúcuta for the reopening of the commercial border between Colombia and Venezuela. Commercial flights will start in October and private vehicles will not yet be able to pass through. The closure of the border was, as Petro put it, a suicide which should not be repeated. This comes as part of a warming of relations after a total break in diplomacy under former President Iván Duque. Petro has also asked Venezuelan President Nicolás Maduro to return to the Inter-American Court of Human Rights, which Venezuela left in 2013 under Hugo Chávez. The first mass mobilizations against the new government, particularly the tax, health and political forms which have so far been proposed, took to the streets in cities across the country on the morning of the 26th of September. Observers calculate around 5,000 people in Bogotá, though Medellín has been reported as the epicenter of the movement. Those were your top stories for this week. Thanks for listening.
And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McColl here in Bogotá, Colombia, 2,600 meters close to the stars. And if you are a regular listener to the Colombia Calling podcast, our next guest will need no introduction. He's been on twice before. His name's Daniel Eggington. He's now officially an adventurer. I'm going to let him say what he's done, those of you who follow me, who follow what we've been putting up online, will know what he's done, but it's kind of incredible. Certainly foolhardy, but he did it. Daniel, welcome back on the show.
Thanks for having me back again.
I am relieved. You know, when I got the message earlier this year saying, all right, this is it. I'm going back to cross the western side of the Darien Gap, the Darien Jungle. I was like, oh God, he's going to get turned back for the third time. So the twice you've been on before have been sort of attempts. And now This time you actually made it. So what happened this time that meant you could trek through the western side of the Darien?
I think it was the build-up of me relinking, networking with people, so many trips back and forward. Some people got to recognize my face. I worked with two people regularly on the Colombian side, and there was one person on the Panamanian side, mm-hmm. and I was always in contact with them, telling my plans. But I think it was just point blank, not telling the authorities this time. I just literally got there, got into a hotel. Say hotel in Harare, it's a person's house, and they just rent their room. And I literally just stayed there, went out for food in the evening, went back, contacted the local fixer, so to speak. And I was like, what's happening? What's happening? We need to meet to talk properly, to have a conversation. I said, okay, in the evening, meet me at the beach. So in the evening, I went to the beach and I explained what I've explained to him in the past. I want to cross over the Darien. He's saying exactly what every other person has said. You can't do it. It's dangerous. You'll get kidnapped. People are in charge. They're not very nice. And I said, I understand all of that. And I've been here. I've been to Colombia 5 times now, doing recce trips, and Panama 4 times now. And he's like, I understand what he's saying, but it's the groups are in charge. And my first question to him on our first meeting, what group's in charge? Because all the outside sources, One Rock, now even risk analysis and top people who work in Colombia have always told me it's ELN. ELN's in charge. ELN are in charge. And I'm like, so I've asked him directly. He's like, no, it's the clan. So I'm thinking the worst group you can probably come across in Colombia after all the drama that happened in the last 12 months with the, and I was like, oh, this is going to be another failure. And he said, it's going to end up in tragedy. People are going to be looking for you. And I said, I'll do whatever I need to do. I'll pay whoever I need to. I'll meet people. I'll follow all the rules. And he's like, okay, you sure? I can give you a different option. He said, I can get you to Cocalito on the boat and you can explore Cocalito. My brother lives in Cocalito. It's very nice. And I said, I don't doubt it. It's beautiful. But my aim is to start in Jorado and end in Jaque, crossing over the border, overland. He's like, okay, wait for me. And I went back to my hotel, texting him, WhatsApping, whenever the signal worked, saying any news, probably 6-7 times a day. And he replied probably 2 or 3 times, but he was working on my behalf. And it came out, he said, okay. And it just, the next day came, and it was 5 days of waiting in Jorado altogether.
Incredible. So, but the fixer came through in the end. You obviously had to pay him some money. I imagine it's quite a lot, because he had to then probably pay others.
Yeah. Yeah, I got in touch with, I assume you know, Carlos Villalon.
Yes.
And I was in contact with him, expecting him to tell me what kind of rough prices would expected. And he did help me out quite a lot. He said he'll get in touch with people on the east side to then try and get in touch with people who are in charge on the Pacific side. And that didn't really work because the groups are working and they're not very easily contactable. I then asked him, what kind of thing do you expect of the fee, so to speak? And he's like, gave me a rough idea what he's paid in the past, but he said it's alien to him, or it's foreign to him, because he's not been to the Pacific side, he's not familiar with them. And I said, oh, I'm expecting maybe $500. So I was like, I've got that on me, it's not an issue. And then when it finally came through, it was $1,200. I was like, oh. And it kind of made my heart drop, because each time in Jorado, like the previous time, I've only had enough money to then return or to continue either Panama or go back to Bahia Solano. And I literally had only enough $1,200 equivalent in pesos, which is, so 2.4 million, I don't know, about 3 million maybe.
Yeah, it's around that.
And I ended up literally having that, and I had then dollars on me. And I wanted to look after the guy who helped me out, Then I gave him $100 in, like, as in, like, the only part of the US dollars that I had to then help me out in Panama. But yeah, it made my heart sink a little bit with the fee, but I had it exactly. But, and I said, I've got to do it now. It's either now or never, so to speak.
So let's wind right back to the beginning for our new listeners, because we have had an upturn. Why did this plan of crossing the Pacific side of the Darien Gap, where did it come from? Because the thing is, you know, people have done the other side. And of course, we read almost daily about this absolutely atrocious trek migrants trying to get to the USA do, and the deaths and so on. And of course, the Pacific side is not a trekked one. You didn't see any migrants, I don't imagine. Or did you? No. And so where did it come from, this desire?
I think back in 2015, I watched a film literally called The Darien, because I was always interested in travel and weird and wonderful, most unknown places, documentaries, films. I probably read every book on The Darien, watched every documentary on The Darien, keep up to date on The Darien. And I watched that film, and it was a bit dramatized, so to speak. But I then started thinking, oh, what a unique place. So I started researching from way back then. And then I realized nobody, because the initial plan was to cross from the Panama down into Colombia. That was the initial plan, as in, like, the film did it. And once getting there, getting permission off Center Front, it didn't really come to fruition, so to speak. So then it was back to the drawing board. But the Pacific side was the place I had to cross, because there's no record of it. There's no account, so to speak, of people doing it. And so I put everything I could in my research and money in the last 6 years, 7 years, going there, getting in touch with people, buying maps which was outdated.
It was the deal is that you just had to do it. I mean, there was no way around it, because the last time we talked, the second one, I spent about 35, 40 minutes just telling you not to do it, it through different manners. And I got a lot of emails from listeners who saying, they were saying, like, we tried to count how many times and how many different ways you told him not to do it. And I was actually kind of relieved that you were sent back by the military. Mm-hmm. But this time went through, and I suppose it's because you paid the money and you had the right fixes. So you prepared for this by doing, and we know this, you're up there in, I think, the Brecon Beacons, and you're up there, hiking, but there's nothing quite like the Darien jungle. Tell us about this trek.
I think the preparation, what I was doing, Brecon, Peak District, Snowdon, wherever I was closer to with work here in the UK, I'd be doing 10 miles with full rucksack on, and now doing that, I'd be doing hill reps, and that's, I would copy army training and what they would be doing in the UK, and I would literally just do hill reps. But I would do 10 miles. I wouldn't do more than 10 miles in Brecon, because my aim was to do 5 to 7 when I'm in the Darien, because it was just going to be so hard. But if I could go back and train, I would train on walking up rivers. The hardest thing, walking up rivers against the current, and then climbing 700 meters. That literally put me in bits. But yeah, walking up rivers, that would be the next. If I was to prep again, it would be.
And the rivers, I mean, these rivers that you encountered there in the Darien, I mean, were they full rivers? It was raining. Yeah. And how high was the water up in your body?
We had 7 full river crossings in what we had to do in the first 2 days. And it was the major rivers after that, but we had to stop on the first night because the river was just swollen, and he's like, there's no chance. And I've got like video and pictures of it and me recording how powerful the river is, and it's just chucking down a rain. I was like, I agree with him, and it would be a death sentence trying to cross certain rivers certain times of the day when it's a certain level. And that's, I think, local knowledge and preparation, it builds you up to it.
It's interesting you say about the river, walking against the current, and it's rainy season. It is the rainforest. I mean, it's the jungle. And then you said the climbing, to me, 700 meters doesn't sound like a lot, but it was mud and jungle. I mean, it was just lots of mud, I imagine.
It was just dense. And the one the first climb, which wasn't even a big climb, and it was just chucking down a rain. It's just a river, really. And it's like water's probably up to your ankles whilst you're climbing the river. So I cut myself like a little stick, and I had like 3 points of contact every single time. It was terrible. My legs were just spasming. It's simply just because of the effort that I was putting in, and it was gnarly, man.
It was gnarly. Now so let's get some of the basic facts. From where you left in Jurado to get up to Jaque in Panama, how far is it in sort of miles or kilometers, and how many days did it take?
I aimed the route from what I was mapping at about 65 miles I was expecting to do if I followed my route exactly. Mm-hmm. But that's from bird's eye imaging, and that's from the knowledge and the map. But once you're on the ground, you don't account for the rivers, you don't account for the climbing, you don't account for the deadfall, you don't account for any of that. But first of all, we had to catch a boat to a community that would look after us, because there were six Indian communities that wouldn't even touch us, because it was the group is going to cause trouble from them with the groups. And it was only one, I forgot the name of the village, I have written it down, Santa Teresa or something like that. And they were the only ones that said, yeah, we'll do it if you pay us. And that's what added up the funds.
So you paid them. And then how many days was the crossing?
So the boat was just one day, and the full thing was four days, as in 3 days walking and one day on the boat. And I expected to be more than that. I planned for more than that, but it was just a sheer pace. The guide set, he was doing 15 miles the first day, he set the pace, because he's so familiar with it. Mm. And he was just up and down, up and down. And I've got videos of that, me saying he's just set pace, and I've gained his respect. And then an hour later, I'm like, no, I don't have no respect for me no more. But it was like 50 miles. So it worked out to about, I think we ended up doing about 50 miles, and that was the full wow. crossing on the Pacific.
And now this one, it's an indigenous town, allowed you to be there. Six didn't. I mean, that's an amazing fact in itself. Did you come into contact with any of the Clan del Golfo?
Within two people walking back, it was all in wellies, and it was assumed. Now, one had, it's easy enough to carry guns in that part of Colombia anyway. And the one did have a gun in his waistband, and he was looking at me and laughing at me because I'm at the size of my rucksack. Mm. And I just didn't engage in a conversation. I've got footage of the guide, because this was on the first day coming back into Colombia, as they've obviously just passed traffic, took someone over, and they've came back on themselves. He had a brief conversation, but I didn't even stop 5 minutes talking to him. I just carried on, and they just laughed at me and telling me such a large bag I've got.
Do you think that he laughed at you because he thought you weren't going to make it because of that big bag?
Yeah. The Loma, they call them Lomas, and I didn't know what a Loma was. And with my Spanish, it's climbs or upwards or higher than ground level. And he's like, the next Loma, Proxima Loma, is very difficult. I'm like, okay. Let's carry on.
So, but at no point did you feel then, when you passed this guy with a gun in his belt or whatever, you didn't feel threatened at any point?
No, not from their behavior. But I think I've experienced certain things like that anyway within Colombia. You can see people carrying guns, and it's never been an aggressive thing. It's just, I think it's a cultural thing, because it's such an issue at that part of Colombia. But no, like, I never felt threatened by them. They never even had a conversation with me, and I just, carried on.
They weren't in camouflage or in...
No, they was in Wellington boots, and that was a big quiz on the end. Like I said, they would get that with the centre front telling me what certain people wear, it was cool.
Yeah, the gorillas normally wear the Wellington boots. They're the ones known for it. So, but they laughed at you, which I would take. I would take that as positive. They don't see you as a threat. And so, I've seen some of the footage. I've seen some of the clips you put on, I think, Instagram and on Twitter, and it's pretty, or on Facebook. It's pretty hardcore, I'm not going to lie. And there's one I guess it's in the rain. You might be crossing a river in the rain, or it might have been at night. Ah, no, it's at night or the afternoon in the rain, and you're just going, it's raining and it's raining.
Yeah.
I mean, what about the, did you get, I want to say leeches, mosquitoes, sand flies, what else?
Yeah, the flies was a massive problem. They didn't stop. But there was big ones as well. And I didn't have any names for them, just large flies, and they would literally draw blood from you. Mosquitoes were just tenfold every day. You can hear them buzzing whilst you're in my hammock, and they're getting right up against the netting. You can hear them. And yeah, that was in the day. I just ended up getting used to them. I just carried on walking. I didn't even start swatting my head or nothing. And the last day I wore shorts because all the rest of my clothes was the only dry clothes, and my expectation was this is going to be the last day now, so I'm going to be as comfortable as I can, try and build my morale. But that was, like I say, a rookie error. and my legs was in tatters, my hands was in tatters.
And you haven't got any, you know, tropical diseases yet. You don't know if you come down.
I've had blood tests like I do when I come back from wherever, especially all the time. I'll have blood tests, but there's nothing. Nothing been picked up.
All right, that's okay. No leishmaniasis or particularly nasty things. I hope you don't. I mean, they take a little bit of time to appear, but I hope it's nothing. Good. So you probably saw the clan. You were up there, I was on your sort of, let's say, emergency call or check-in list. Flattered to be so. I don't know what I would have done had anything happened, but I would have helped. I got a message on Twitter from one of your brothers, I think.
Yeah.
You know, have you heard from Dan? This is Sam. I think his name's Sam, right? Is he a boxer?
The younger brother.
Yeah. I checked out his Twitter profile. It's quite terrifying with all those tattoos. but I was like, no, just in my head, I was like, we could just send that guy down. He'll sort them all out. But so I was on there, and then you called me. I can't remember what day it was, like a Monday, I think. You actually called me and said, I've hit the Hacke River or whatever. So I'll be at a community soon. And you said, worst thing I've ever done. I think that's the words you said. And so really, really definitely the worst thing you've ever done.
Yeah. As in, like, I didn't enjoy one part of the journey at all. I'm glad I did it over the moon, that because it took so much of preparation, so much of my life, so much worry from family. But unless they pay me £20,000, I would not do that again. I wouldn't. It's terrible.
Yeah. Well, and so we talked a little bit why you had to do it and so on. And I mean, I guess you're the first Brummy or the first Brit to have done it. I mean, in all your research, apart from the local guys who obviously run it back and forth, who else, I mean, whose footsteps were you following in? Or have you been charting something new?
I think parts of it, they're trotchers, another new word that I learned, a trotcher. They're illegal routes. Back and forward, and it's literally, he's like, no, there's an influx of Venezuelans now. For the last year, they're starting to go to the Pacific side because the Caribbean side is so chocker, so full up. So I think, I mean, I get messages on Instagram probably weekly from people that have seen me on YouTube asking me how I travel from the Darien on the Pacific side. I can literally screenshot, and people from back in the Syria, Sudan, and they're asking me how I did it. So, and I think it's going to go the same way as the eastern side soon enough. But at the minute, I think he said he's seen 30 people this year that have gone to that area to try and cross over. And I don't know how successful it was, but you see strewn bits of clothes. Like I found an ID as well, and Venezuelan identification. That's the only memory that I could bring back, because the center front never let me bring my machete or my walking stick. They just took it aside. So that's literally.
So you've actually got the Venezuelan ID?
Yeah, I have. Oh. It's got it. I assume she's okay. I hope she's okay.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I hope she's okay. What's her name? Yeah. What's it? Hold it up again. I see her name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it closer? There we are. So it's Mare de Gomez, Stephanie Daniela Mare de Gomez.
Yeah,
married, yeah. Born 29th of the 12th, 2004.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. Thank you for that. But I mean, that's people. I'm terrified of losing my ID. And if I was Venezuelan, yeah. I'd be more so. So one yeah. only can hope and pray that she did get across because, yeah. you know, given you were trained, I mean, you were carrying yeah. stuff like your hammock, mosquito net, your machete,
yeah.
you had things and you had a GPS and so on and so forth. These Venezuelans who are looking for a better life have nothing.
Yeah.
They take what they can on their back and it's not a lot.
No, and they in Hake at the end, a group. There was two of them that had been just put there for yeah. 3-4 months. Had just been held there, mm-hmm. and they invited me to a little party. They were having a party. I think their mentality is, it's like they've been held there, but they're so much happier, mm-hmm. and they enjoyed playing music, typical Latin culture. They're just partying, enjoying me, asking if I'm bored because I get walking, doing paces around the town. I'm like, inviting me up to their balcony.
They yeah. must have just thought you were very strange as well. Yeah. You know, this guy's done yeah. this for pleasure and for yeah. a challenge, whereas we're. And so I'm curious about this. Now you've done it. You did the 50 miles up and yeah. down the Lomas. You really suffered, I think. You're not going to do it again. But uh-huh. with what end? I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you took a lot of footage that, of course, we haven't yeah. seen. Is there a TV deal in the making?
Yeah, so I've met up with National ITV here in the mm-hmm. UK, and they're going to, with the footage that I've got, it's probably about 2.5 hours worth of footage, so it's about 80 gig I've got. So I've just constantly recorded loads of little bits, river crossings, snakes that I've come across, people that I've come across, interactions, and they said they can 100% do minimum 2 pieces out of it in like a news special, but they're trying to aim for 3.
Mm.
But the part is, because I got abandoned by the guide as well on day 2, he just said, I've got to go, I'll get arrested. And he said, at least we can do 1 part to when you got abandoned, and then we can pull a cliffhanger saying, what happened now? Because I've got that on footage. But I couldn't really be grumpy with my guide because he'd just leave me in the jungle and not help me out in directions. I can't just argue with my page to take me to show me where Hake is, and you're not showing me. I just pretended like I was cool and calm, but really I was in shock, like, oh my gosh. No.
So, I mean, this guy, and I think I got his name from you, but we're not going to say it. This guy said, I'm yeah. going to get in trouble, I'm going to get arrested. And he abandoned yeah. you like at the end of day 1 or the beginning of day 2?
Yeah, beginning of day 2.
He just said, I'm going.
I've got to go, I will get arrested. I'm wanted in Panama for trafficking and bringing like things over. I can't go no further. And I'm like, Just show me Hake. It's like, I can't show you Hake. If go down the hill, turn right at the river, follow the river, and that's the Hake River. Obviously, it's like, all right, get bottom of the hill, turn right at the river. The river was going the wrong direction to start with. So I was lost in the jungle then. So then I followed the river probably 7 miles down, and then I seen another cut into the jungle, and then I followed that then. And luckily, backtracking on my steps, following the river back and forward, and that's when I said, I've got to, because it was quite late, maybe 4 o'clock when I set a camp. I don't want to be wandering around at night in the jungle. And I said, that's when I was all emotional. I was thinking, I need to get out tomorrow. I've got to. So I was like, keep this 15-mile pace and I should be fine regarding what the GPS says. Yeah.
So you had to backtrack on that?
Yeah, countless times when I got to the river. When I walked up the river, putting trust in the guide, and it was going against the flow
yeah.
of. No, you need to follow the river to get to the coast. And it was just, it's not even a big river where I got to.
Yeah.
And the Hake River is huge. I'm yeah. like, this can't be right. So it's like a tributary of the Hake River.
Right.
And I had to follow that and then cut back into the jungle. And luckily, I had machete. I had emergency ration food, or I'd be there now, still wandering around.
And when you say you got emotional, did you sort of just break down and cry? Or
I mean, yeah, I think it's just like, yeah. I don't deal with emotion as in like I don't feel like it benefits me, as in like I don't feel like emotion benefits me, so I try not to do it. But when you're there and I'm stuck, and I was like, I've got to kind of really
yeah hard. I mean, hard. And that's, when you're going up against this kind of geography and, of course, the mental strength which is required. But let's talk about the geography again. I mean, how thick was it? I mean, was the jungle? I know you were going through trotchers, but on either side, was the jungle like impenetrable?
Yeah, it was dense, huge trees. But there's like there's plants that will just cut you. There's like I call it razor grass. It probably ain't the right term, really, scientific. But it's grass that is like a razor blade, and your hands get caught. And last year, I got caught in it doing like a walking just the Bodoadito from Jurado. Mm-hmm. And this year, I was just. It was terrible. My hands were in ribbons.
So the guy, and also the guy abandoned you beginning of day two. So you had two days alone.
Yeah.
This is a serious test. I mean, not only I said physically, mentally, but was there any ever a moment you thought I'm going to turn around and go back?
I think you couldn't quit that situation because I think in my mental. My mentality is like, you either sit here and do nothing and it's going to be the end of you, really, if you don't do nothing. But going back, it was probably longer than continuing going forward, really, as in like the distance that I've made. And then going back up them two hills, as in like them two llamas as well, I was like, I'd think it would have took me to bits. But I was close in doing like the SOS on the PL, on the locator beacon as well. I had it out and I was like, I'm going to, but I get to the river and I see how I feel. And then at the part where I just jump, I'm just sitting in the river then just soaking. And I was like, water and food and see how I figure in 2 hours time.
So if you'd hit the SOS beacon, would that go to the Navy and that go to me?
Well, yes, it would have. But it wouldn't have worked simply because on my return, when I got back, there was only 11 coordinates that was mapped. So when I got back and got in touch with them, technical thing, it was out for 6 days, that service. But I mapped it through my watch, my Garmin watch and my Garmin map as well. So the emergency locator beacon was defunct. And I've got that as like a chat transcript from Global Star saying it was out in Panama and Colombia for 6 days from the 25th to the 31st or the 1st of this month. And I was like... I'm trying in the process of getting my money back now, refund.
Well, so hang on a second. It was out for the exact days that you were crossing.
Yeah. What are the odds in that?
You can laugh about it now. I mean, you can laugh about it. And I hope you get your money back because that's kind of incredible. And your life is hanging in that.
Yeah. And that's what my argument is. And that's why you only got one, I am sleeping here. Mm. That's one thing. And my two other people in the emergency thing, they only got one as well. And there was panicking. And that's why, like, my brother was chasing you because I told him that I've got you and there's another person in the UK that's got all the information, the insurance details. And I was like, have you seen him? Have you heard from him? And
then, Well, I got a message and I got a message from him, I guess it was day two. Yeah. And then I guess it was late or day four or day three that you called me. It was over breakfast and I was like looking at this number. I was like, what the hell is this? And then I was this Birmingham accent that came through and I was like, oh yeah. And you said, so then I sent a message straight to your brother and just heard from him. And you said, I found that I can see a boy fishing. So I know the community is close.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yes, and so I got that go all on. I shouted him, and he was like, "Cross the river," and I'm like, "The river, this is the Hake River." Now, bearing in mind, it's huge, and it's normal to them. And I've just walked 4 days in the jungle. I mean, I'm shattered, and I did try and cross the river, and the only time I dropped my bag without the plastic covering because I thought I wasn't even thinking. I was making silly mistakes. I was that tired. I was just. Not thinking, I didn't put my head on my shoulder and think, oh, I'll put the black bag on that because I've got the drone, I've got the satellite, I've got everything in there. And I dropped in the river like that. I just went mad. I went, for 4 days, no problem. But now I've got a problem. And he's like, okay, I'll go and get a pirogue. I said, okay.
But so, I mean, that's it. You were that tired that the silly mistakes were coming in. And an error, dropping your bag in and that's it. That goes a long way to show how tough it really was.
Yeah.
Now, you've mentioned ITV. And there might be some news pieces out on, but what's the end game of doing this? You want to become, I guess it's sort of like an expeditioneer.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, I enjoy it all. I'm always thinking of the next trip or the next challenge, so to speak. I think I want to keep my Spanish, because I haven't used it for 2 weeks since being back. Because I've only been back, what, nearly 3 weeks now. And I'm going to get back on my lessons, make sure I'm still talking Spanish every single day. What are the, it's going to be a Spanish-speaking country, or even just somewhere crazy like Papua New Guinea or Pakistan, or just somewhere that we can just notch it up just a little, or a flat area where there's lots of jungle.
But I mean, but are you, you want jungle? What about high altitude, or what about desert area? I mean, just, or jungle is your thing?
I think my interest comes with the animals and stuff of the jungle. I think desert is a whole new challenge. I think places like Everest, as brilliant and as difficult as altitude training, altitude expeditions are, I feel there's a blueprint for them. There's a way to do it. If you want to go Mount Everest and you've got the money to do it, you're going to do Mount Everest. And you can't take the challenge away, because that's it's a graft, and it's, as in, like, it's an aim for loads of people. But I think there's just a way to do it. So why do it? That's my logic.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, it's done, isn't it? It's not, people do it and sign up for it, but only, obviously it's a huge challenge. So it's going to be jungle. Yeah, but you want to notch it up a bit. I wonder what's harder. One of my listeners said, oh, you know, he likes dangerous stuff. You know, recommend Eastern Yemen. Please don't go to Eastern Yemen. It was a joke, but and so on. I'm not taking responsibility for that. But you want a Spanish speaking place? Okay.
Yeah, well, there's a little small country in Africa that speaks Spanish, and there's not much known about that. I think it's Guinea-Bissau.
Yeah.
It's the only Spanish speaking African country.
Yeah.
Oh.
And the Western Sahara area, they would speak Spanish, wouldn't they?
Because
it did have a Spanish colonial, I think. So I think there would be some Spanish, but it's, again, it's a Sahara, so it's different. But I mean, there's so many things. And you did mention quickly the animals. You saw snakes. Yeah. What else? Yeah. What kind of snakes?
I think it was a viper. So I've got that on footage. And this was on the morning of the second day. Uh-huh. And it was only small, and I wouldn't have spotted it. I would not have spotted it. And the guy did. An hour just before we left, he's like, oh, snake, should I kill it? I'm like, no, don't kill it, because that's just what they do. Straight away. And I was like, no. So I've got it all on footage, him asking me to kill him. But I've got the camera really close to it, and it's just there flicking its tongue out. And I haven't properly watched my footage because it's such a high bit rate that my laptop doesn't play it yet. But on a higher end laptop, I was like the ITV team I met a few last week playing brilliantly. So I'm going to watch it all properly without converting it and compressing the quality.
Was it venomous?
Yeah, it would have. Like I said, Bothrops, Aspas, so it's further lamps, Storicipello. Culebra, he called it.
Culebra. But you had snake bite kit with you?
Yeah, well, it's different. It's hard. I think antivenom, you can't carry antivenom. You have to buy antivenom in the UK. You need a poisons license, but it don't last very long. But there's different first aid, different snakes, and that would have just added best way to prevent it. Get away, don't let it happen. But you get bit by a viper, further length, you can't put pressure on it. You have to, because it's a corrosive, so to speak, rot your flesh. You get bit by a coral snake and a lapid species, and it's different. Process, but you get bit by a boss rock or a coral snake in the jungle, probably not much you're going to be able to do, I don't think.
Did you see anything else?
Yes, scorpions, spiders on the night. You can just see all the little eye shines. You can hear in one of the videos, like the roar of something, and it's either a peccary or a jaguar. And I don't know. I'm going to send it to somebody to give me some sort of...
It's a big difference, though, the peccary and the jaguar.
But you don't want to meet them peccaries or... No.
I was in the jungle in Caquetá in southern Colombia, and when we were camping one night, and there was something sniffing around the camp. There was something that came around. Fortunately, I just went, I'm just going to close my eyes. And I went to sleep, because I'm amazing at sleeping. I mean, that's one of my superpowers. But I don't know. I wouldn't do what you've done, and I am pleased that you've done it, that you're not going to do it again. You didn't become a statistic that we had to then, I had to, you know, I didn't have to then, you know, be a guest expert on news shows saying, well, yeah, Daniel was in touch. I tried to talk him out of it. Had he done that?
Yeah.
So please be careful. And I hope all the best for this next, whatever you do next, and ITV. One more question, though. You got out on the Panama side.
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, you have to sort of, do immigration or whatever. What did they say to you? Because you probably
treated sorry, yeah, they treated me like a criminal. As soon as I've seen them in the footage, they stripped me off, clothes, bag, everything. They stripped me. And then they treat me like a criminal for maybe an hour, 2 hours, but my legs, my feet are bleeding. I've lost toenails and I mean, shattered. All my clothes are soaked through. And he's just, he's not caring. I'm trying to drink my water. He's telling me to put it down. And then after he realized I was just, I said, you need to look up my website. You need to do this. You need to do that. Not interested. And afterwards, they realized and they brought another center front guy who's learning English. Yeah. So I was speaking to him in English. And then they dressed me up again, told me to put everything back in my bag and walk in as if I've just walked in. Then they started videoing me and taking pictures as like I was a celebrity. And I've got that because I put the camera here all the time. So yeah. As I've clicked it, he's there directing me how to walk, snapping pictures away. So, yeah. Well,
I think need to use that part, don't you? You need to use that part, which is kind of comical that they've then...
Yeah.
Restaging your entry.
Yeah, exactly.
You see, that's the thing. And you didn't have an exit stamp from Colombia either. So
I was worrying about that. So I was looking for a flight to get back out of Panama.
Yeah.
I was trying to go to Mexico, but the flights were extortion because I don't have the COVID vaccine. It was hard to go to the US. You can't go to the US without it. So then I had to pay $1,500 for a flight from Panama to Bogota, 20 hours layover in Bogota, and from Bogota to London, and they didn't even look in my passport, and I was panicking about that. They didn't even look in my passport. I even got an exit stamp actually exiting Colombia from Bogota. They just ushered us all through because I don't know what was happening, but they didn't even look. Well, I was worried about that. Yeah,
amazing. Because you didn't get an exit stamp to go into Panama, then really, I mean, I guess they still had you listed as being in Colombia. So, you know, on the online and the migration website, Migración, probably you didn't ring any bells, which is very much in your favor because they can be pretty tough. Definitely.
I'm really worried about that. Yeah.
So now, again, finishing up, we're going to see you then on ITV and some other places. And then you hope to make a living from this.
Yeah, like I say, I hopefully get some. I have written one book about the One Guyana expedition that I did do. And that pays my drone insurance now, just the royalty from that nice £6 a month pays my drone insurance. So hopefully I'll get another one. But it's a hard task writing a book. I'll have to get someone involved.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listen, Daniel, again, thank you for considering me as a person, as a point for contact. We have been a champion. If not the most positive champion, but we've been a champion of your expedition, and I'm glad you made it through. And I'm glad, you know, it's an experience now from which you grow and you've obviously learned from it. Yes. And to have been abandoned for 2 days is something else. I mean, I don't even know. Like you said, it was emotional. In fact, I can't even imagine. I'm trying to picture. I've got pictures in my mind from your social media clips, but to be doing it yourself, because it always looks like you're accompanied. Because I know you've got you've got the sort of selfie stick or whatever you're recording on. So it always looks like there's someone there with you, but there's not. I mean, that's It's you alone.
Yeah. When the footage comes out and it's structured into a bit more creative than what I can do, you can see like it puts the story into context or the trip into context.
All right. Well, listen, tell what's your Instagram so people can follow on it.
So my Instagram is just my name, Daniel Eggington.
Yeah.
And which I'm most active on. Twitter is the opposite. It's Eggington Daniel. Mm-hmm. And like I say, I do use Instagram more than Twitter just because it's much more user-friendly, I think. Pictures focused.
Pictures. And so people, you can follow it in there. And of course, you'll be releasing little by little more clips from the journey. And of course, we hope to see further adventures and details of what's coming up next, because you're certainly carving out an interesting life for yourself doing these things. I'm not jealous, though. I'll leave it to you. But so thank you so much for sharing this experience, which has been a challenge, no doubt about it. But thank you. This has been the third time you've been on the show. You made it. Third time lucky. Well done. Listen, and please, always, you know, think about the security of it all. Think about it. And I'm not recommending, at no point am I recommending here on the on the podcast that anyone should do this either. Daniel spent years researching this and had two false starts before his final one, and it also got tricky. So, Daniel, thank you again for your time.
Okay. Appreciate it, Richard.
Yeah, real pleasure. We've been talking to Daniel Eggington, explorer, conquered, I guess we could say, conquered the Pacific side of the Darien Gap. This has been the Columbia Calling podcast. We'll go over to our sponsors. And of course, be sure to listen again next week. We'll be talking to more people, Columbia-related stories. Thank you and bye-bye. This episode was brought to you by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean. Since 1967, their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. And also, our other sponsor is BNB Colombia Tours, experts in custom-made travel throughout Colombia. The team at BNB Colombia Tours can provide you with fantastic private experiences, creating wonderful memories of Colombia for a lifetime. Check out the website at bnbcolombia.com, complete the free itinerary form, and tell them that Columbia Calling sent you to receive a further 5% off their already great prices. So that's bnbcolombia.com and, of course, latinnews.com. Thank you for everyone for listening. That's us. Farewell. And, of course, check back next week. Bye-bye.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.